gotten a few situations where you get fucked over, you know.
I want to create solutions which help people.
Be this person I want to be in the future. I have to follow this path.
Seeing their lifestyle, you know, the type of lifestyle that I want.
Africa's bank accounts, paint your dreams.
Welcome to today's episode. Today I'm joined by Thomas. Thomas is a data scientist. He does developing of analyzing software. At the current moment, he's doing something in the football area. It's in the works. You can always check it out on his YouTube. How are you doing, Thomas?
Hello, sir. How are you? I'm doing well myself. Thank you very much for the kind words.
So, Thomas, can you just tell us about yourself? You know, like, who is Thomas when people see you? I see on your Twitter handle, it's written Blue's data analyst. So people would want to know who's that person behind that.
No, I don't want to limit myself to just being a data analyst, because I feel like I'm a lot of things more than that. I look at myself more as a solutions architect rather than a data analyst, because sometimes I'm doing web development, sometimes I'm doing app development. I'm just trying to find ways to solve problems and make money at the same time.
That's very interesting. That's very interesting. You, like, I think everyone always feels like that. They don't like to be bottled as one thing, although maybe that's their main thing. But of course, you do more things than that. That's some wise words coming from a person who got a medal from Obama himself. That was a milestone, I see.
No, that's Photoshop.
I could tell. I'm just playing with you. It's always something which is so fun when you see you just scrolling down on Twitter and bam, you see that and you're like, Obama himself gave this man a medal.
My dad once saw it. I put it on my WhatsApp status, and then he was like, "Wow, when did you meet Obama?" I'm like, "No, it's Photoshop. You can't be falling for this."
It is what it is. People who do not understand a lot of this technical stuff, they'll think it's very real. So can you tell us your background? Where did you grow up? What did you do? Just your life, just generally.
I grew up in Bulawayo, and I went to Greenfield Primary School. And then I went to John Talak High in Tabazinduna, but still Bulawayo the same. And then after that, I did my A-level at Founders High. It's also in Bulawayo. And then I did my undergraduate in China at Ocean University of China. It's in Qingdao, close to the ocean in China. And then I came back here. I've been here since 2022, you know, been working as a data analyst in different companies. Yeah, it's just been me.
It's very interesting how you, of course, the boy grew up in Blues, went to study in the China, the different culture, different lifestyle. I've had the pleasure of talking to another fellow developer, Koslat Danda, who was also in China, who's still in China doing his degree. How was your experience for you in China?
It was interesting and very eye-opening, you know, but then because I worked for a few companies while I was there, while I was also being a student. So I got to learn a lot of things, and I see and saw a lot of people doing a lot of unique things. But then at the same time, I wish I could have explored more things. But it was a great experience. The food, the people, everything, wonderful.
As you always know that there are no mistakes, there are only lessons. Like you said, next time the opportunity comes around, you definitely branch out and access it more. So now in the question to be more specific to what you're currently doing, how did you enter the field of data analysis or data science?
So with data analysis, I was working at this company that was selling in China, they were selling hair, right? And then they wanted to advertise on Facebook and all of these things, but then they didn't know how to do it. So I was doing their web services at the time, and then slowly started more and more to do their advertising on online. So then while doing that, you know, you start to receive all of this information, and you have to process it, and then you have to display it. And you have to give it to the people who are working above you, your supervisors. And slowly you start to become a data analyst, even though you don't realize it. And then more and more I started to shift to that role. And then after like a year, I moved to a different job where large amount of my focus was just doing just data analysis for them. And then when I graduated, I came back, I got a job working for this company that's based in South Africa. It was a remote job, and doing that remote job, it was just purely based me and data analysis. So then I started to just get a love more and more of a love for it. And then around in November last year, I got into projects. I love doing like personal projects because I believe that's how you become a data analyst. You go out in the world, you collect real data and you use it to solve real problems. So then I started doing data collection and analysis for football teams and D1 and stuff like that. I started posting about it like this year, but then I started that thing like a while ago. So I would be doing all of that. And in all of these personal projects, I left that job at the end of the year last year. And I started a new one in January. And that's where I'm still at, doing data analysis and all of this stuff. But there's always more to do, with data analysis. That's just me.
My question then comes to this, like, you said you were doing web services the first time you entered the field of data analysis. So I want to say, was your data analysis skills through educational route or through self-teachings?
And so when I was doing computer science degree, there was a module that we did on machine learning. That's where I learned the core skills of being a machine learning engineer, knowing how to use the data and how to data bend and all of that stuff. And then this other stuff with just data analysis, I'm largely self-taught or internet taught, I think. No real formal education. You just go out and then you try to solve problems, and while you're working with data, things are just always gonna come up and pop up and pop up. Then you learn how to solve those problems. And you eventually just find yourself with the catalog of all these skills of knowing how to deal with this situation, that situation. And I think that's what makes you a data analyst or whatever profession that you're in. I think being in the field, getting your hands dirty, that's the thing that's going to make you become a professional eventually.
Very powerful. We live in an era where you do not necessarily need to go to school to learn some specific skills these days, mm-hmm. and you can basically learn it yeah. on your own or through the internet. So from someone who has experienced both a traditional route through your computer science degree, then a bit more specialization through mm-hmm. self-teachings, and you've also met people in the industry who maybe went specifically for data sciences to school, how mm-hmm. did that make you, like, you know, when you did your comparing and contrast, was there too much of a big mm-hmm. gap, or there was any problems, or it was mostly stable, you were able to enter the job and do what was needed to be done?
The main thing is that people I find who are employers, they're interested in just are able to get in and do the thing and do it properly. So what I find is, the people, for example, like me, who have like got this computer science background, but then we're very much into this data science thing, we are a little bit more versatile, to where I can talk intelligently about web development. At the same time, I can also understand the process of maybe developing some sort of app and just develop the development of algorithms, which it gives me a little bit of an advantage, maybe when we are designing specific solutions using data, that the person who skipped the whole part that I went through doesn't really have. But it's not really much of a drawback for them, because if your prime focus is, I want to be this data analyst, I want to be that data scientist, you're going to be okay. Otherwise, they're going to have an advantage obviously, like getting interviews and getting job offers, you have more of an advantage if you've got some form of formal education. If you've got certificates and stuff like that, it just pulls you far, far ahead than the competition. And if you don't have all of that, you have to do extra work, you have to do portfolio stuff. But then if you're competing with somebody who has got that formal education and they've got these skills, these certifications, everything that you have, it's a little bit more difficult that way. That's what I find.
Thank you for those words, because I feel like a lot of people want to get into certain fields, but they don't necessarily want to pay that hefty amounts of money to do some of these things. But as you said, it's more about with the skills, you know, can you do the job perfectly? Like you said, that's what the employers really care. They don't really care that you went to the top A school or you went to a certain place. Just care that with the skill set you have and we give you a job, can you do that? On that topic, as you continue following your journey, how has sports influenced you?
I like to win, and I love winning. That's the thing that drives me, I think, every day in the morning. So when I look at sports and with the intersection of data in it, I want to help teams who also want to win by any means necessary and to take whatever advantages that they can get. So that's why I like looking at data, at sports through the lens of data and trying to implement solutions and give teams advantages over their opponents using data. That's the influence that sport has on me and how I like to use it.
That's very inspirational. Before we get in deeper into that, some of your current work at the moment, let's talk about this one. It's the first one which made me get in contact with you was your AI for the UFC fighting. That project was really inspirational because you could really see the growth of it. From what I saw, I remember the first trial, not the predictions were a bit off very far. Then as time went and you developed it, I think you got to almost 80% accuracy. So how was that project for you as a personal project? How did you go about the idea, the development of it, and the results of it?
So with the development, this is actually like from the archives. I did this in like 2021. Yeah, the project's from there. Like I had to blow off a little dust from it when I took it out. So I found a data set on the UFC. I'm a big fan of the UFC, love it, just enjoy the culture, everything about it. And I was interested in seeing, Gucci, like, is it possible to be able to predict some of these fights? Because sometimes you watch fights and then you're like, I feel like I've seen this fight before. Or you watch a fighter fight and then you're like, this guy has got like similar patterns in how he fights. And so you're constantly looking for the edge. And I have gambling friends, so then they were like, we once saw you doing this thing, could you try to predict for the UFC as well? And so then I started to try to do that. But then what that data set was like, it was very big, massive, massive, massive data set. It has information about the fighters and their average like significant strikes, takedowns, all of those things, they were there in the data set. So I built a model. I tried to use KNN to predict the fights. KNN wasn't good because it's the space that it took up, it was just too much, and the accuracy wasn't even anything to write home about. So I couldn't use KNN. I couldn't use RunForest. I couldn't use Decision Trees. It was all just going to be pointless. So then I decided to build a recurrent neural network. And with neural networks, the great thing about it is with a big data set like that, you'll be training a model which you know, which like you can be able to track the, is it improving and stuff like that. So I built that neural network. And then now what you have to do is now you have to collect a data set. This is why I don't do that. I don't do it as often. You have to collect the data set from the UFC website, right? And there's about 12 to 13 fights or 15 fights, depending on the size of the card, every week. And you can't write an algorithm to scrap from the website, because the ESPN website will not allow you to do that. The UFCstats.com website won't allow you to do that. And even if they do, you still have to reformat it again. So it's going to take you more time to write this program, to run the script, and then to have the data in a way that you can put it back into the model and use it again, because that also on its own, it has to be in a particular order for it to work. So I have to like copy and then paste into sheets, into an Excel sheet, convert that Excel sheet to a CSV file, and then upload it to my Jupyter notebook and run it. And then now I have my predictions. But here's the thing, you can't do that on Monday, because between Monday and Friday, a lot of things can happen. Fights can get canceled, fights can get moved, and you'd have to start over again if you predict on Monday. And so then you have to do it maybe on Friday or on Saturday. Then on Saturday, I have to do games, I have to go to work. There's a lot more, you know, which comes up for me to get done. So some projects like the UFC fight prediction one, I'm gonna carry it on. Eventually, I just took a break to just do other things as well.
Data science is a lot of work. It's not for the weak. As you can see, the amount of work that is required to do some of these things, you know, it's all flashy. You know, when you're on YouTube and you're seeing all these videos, it looks glamorous. You know, I'm getting paid this much money, I'm doing this, work at home, I'm doing this. But now you talk about the real struggle, especially if you're not working with a data set that is yours, like you're getting it from somewhere else, it's a very big struggle. On that case again of projects, I first like to congratulate you on your signings. People might not know what I'm talking about, but I know you'd know what I'm talking about. You've been moving, you've been making moves in the soccer industry, especially local football, which is very amazing. Uh-huh. It's really nice to see some of these things happening. So can you just tell, I won't tell the people what's happening, but I would like you to do the winter, tell us the winter story about that. What is happening? How did you get into all of that? And what inspired you? And how you end up managing to convince some teams to join up and stuff like that?
So, well, the news isn't as great as that. It hasn't come to that point yet, you know, because I've gotten a few situations where you get fucked over, you know. Sorry for my language. Like, you thought you have agreements, but then it turns out you don't really have agreements. You just have handshakes. And handshakes to some papers. So, but yeah, we're still on the same program. It's go to these games. We have our cameras at the present moment. It's largely for Division One football games, like in the southern region. So we have our cameras out. We go there. We take the video of the whole thing. And then after that, we come back, we have to take the games. So we're developing this mobile application, where when you're watching the game, and you can just tag the action that's happening. Maybe there's a pass, and you just click on pass. Maybe there's an incomplete pass, you click on incomplete pass. And then you collect the data for you. And then after that, you can analyze it. And also, at the same time, we have got like this video analysis thing that we do, where we're able to put more colors to the data, because the data doesn't explain the whole game, and the video analysis of it just doesn't explain the whole game. The data tells you what happened, and the video analysis tells you why it happened and how it happened. So it's quite a new service for football in the region, but then everywhere else in the world is just the standard. That's what football clubs, professional football clubs, they do, and that's what they use. But it's an interesting journey thus far. we're learning a lot of things, and I'm meeting a lot of cool people that I'm working with. And I'm pretty sure that before the end of like August, September, we're going to have something interesting and a good news to announce with these apps, you know, signings and whatnot.
That is very amazing, because I remember the first time I saw you post about it, I was very surprised, like, why don't we have this in our own, like you said, it's something which is so common outside to the world. Even in SA, when they do their soccer at halftime, there's all that, they go to their table, they can analyze the game. But in Zim, you see at halftime, it's just commenters just talking, and there's maybe visuals. Yes, they tried their best to explain the visuals, but, you know, especially when you watch something like Premier League, them tapping on the table, them doing all those diagrams. Even if you're someone who doesn't watch football to that extent, it draws you in. You see the bigger picture of what these people are trying to illustrate. So I see that at the current moment, you said you got your mobile app that is in charge of taking the stats with what's going on. Then your video camera. So now the question is, how do you join those two things? You got your stats from the mobile phone, and you got the video from the camera. How do you join them together for you to bring out your analysis? Especially, I think you released them on YouTube, then you started explaining. So what is your process down after the game? What do you do after the game with all that information?
So after the game, the stats part of it goes into my own database that I'm building in my computer. And I connect that to Power BI, and then I use Power BI for the BI analysis. And then for the stats, for the video analysis, I use a software from another company. It's called the Once Video Analyzer. It's quite great, because you can track players, you can put drawings on the screen, illustration. It's quite high standard. I pay about $15 per month for it. Yeah, about $15 per month.
That is very hefty, but I think for the reasons why you're doing it, I feel like it's very affordable. It's very affordable for you to pursue what you want until it blows up. It's something you talked about before, like, you know, when you're doing these signings, you think you've got something happening. Then you see that, no, this is all just rubbish. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us your experiences? How do you handle that? And what do you want people to know when they get into a situation like that? How best should they move forward?
My goal generally, and this is what keeps me going, is like, my goal, I want to be one of the best in the world at this. I don't want to be the best in Zimbabwe. I don't want to be the best in Africa. So people who drag you down and they pull you back when you're trying to achieve like these goals, it doesn't really affect the mission, because the mission is still simple. The mission is to do this so well that clubs like Arsenal and Man United, clubs all over the world, they look at you and then they recognize this is the skill that we're always on about. So it's not about here. It's because it's quite sad, but I know that if I get myself to a spot where I'm either working with or for an American football club or an English club or something like that, that's when they're now going to come back to me and be like, hey, we also want you to come back to do this for us in our country. It's sad, but then that's just the way it is. So if it's always important to always remember what the ultimate mission is. If you understand your ultimate mission, it's very difficult for you to get held down by small projects like this.
The mission is very important.
Yeah.
And I think that's something we should all take accountable, that the mission is important, because the mission is not a one-day thing, a one-week thing, a one-year thing. And of course, it's not going to be smooth sailing, or it's just not going to be just cruising at altitude, but it's going to be difficult along the time. And as long as you have that mission in mind, even when you meet this signer, these minor setbacks, like you said before, that it doesn't affect you in that way. Yes, of course, it sucks. No one wants to be, you know, done bad to, no one wants to feel that, but it sucks. But it's like, okay, what did I learn from this? What do I do different next time? So now we move on to a bit more like looking at data analysis, maybe in Africa or maybe in Zimbabwe specifically, depending on how you want to answer these questions. I see that the world around us is evolving around the digital age now. That means there's so much data. Yeah. There's so much data out there. And some data sets are easier to come than others. Like you said, maybe the UFC ones are difficult, but there are some other data sets which are very easy to come by, which you can easily collect. For me, it's always been like, when I look at Africa, it's our innovation stage. I just feel like the data is there, but it feels like it's not being given out. I don't know if you can relate to me like this, because I look at something close to home like Zimbabwe, right? And you decide to try and create maybe a model to solve maybe a certain issue, or you maybe want to analyze something, maybe, for example, our electricity, like maybe there's no, like, is that our data is not readily available. And I feel like most African countries also have that similar issue, like the data is not readily available for you to innovate. That's why you end up having maybe a kid from outside in the America and China develops a solar panel system that solves this problem. Because to them, the data was really available. All they had to do was just download their data, analyze it, predict it, and next thing they're creating these models which are solving the problem. So in your aspect and from your experience in the field, what do you say upon this issue? How best can we solve it? How best can we evolve ourselves so we can use data science to its fullest?
Well, I think we need like boots on the ground. You know, we need like people who are very dedicated to the thing that they want to achieve, that they are willing to go and knock on the offices. And then they're told to, like, no, this is not the right office. You have to knock there. They go and they knock there. And then they told, no, nah, if you come to the other one, and then you have to fill up these forms and whatnot, whatnot. Just be willing to do all of that. Because like right now, I've started a new beef, yeah, that I want to solve. Because there's this thing with ZTN where they're not allowing people to videograph games, and then they don't put highlights on the locals, and they don't have enough cameras to cover all of the games, but then they don't want to allow other people to also cover those games. I don't understand why they're doing it, but I want to get to the bottom of it. I want to put them to task. I want to find out, yeah, well, which, like, why is it this way? Why is it that way? Why? I think we need more people who have so much interest and so much fire to solve these things, eh? That they're willing to take it to the penalties and to find out, like, okay, what's the main drawback that we're facing about this data thing? For example, for me right now, if I want to data on something, I'm gonna go there myself and I'm gonna collect it. I'm not gonna first sit around and go to, like, who do we have to ask? Do I have to find permission? No, you first go, and then you do the thing. And if they tell you to stop, and that's when you're gonna look for the permission afterwards. We want to look for permission too much. We should just go and start collecting data. Obviously, it's not applicable for all of the data sets, but then for the ones that we can, we should do what we can. We should start with where we are, and we should use what we have.
There's that old age saying which says it's better to ask for what? For forgiveness than to ask for permission. And with you, that's your mindset. Like, let me go there. If there's a problem, then we start from there. If it's wrong, okay, then you tell me it's wrong. And I like that, because I remember there's a time you wanted to find out how much the people at the traffic council were making on their parking gates, and decided to go and count parking lots by yourself to see. And it's something like, it's sad that you have to do that, but if we are a man on a mission who's like, I need to get down to the bottom of this, it drives you to get that movement. And I like the mindset of, we need people who ask the question why. I think that's something which Africa as a whole faces. Like, not a lot of people asking the question why. Why is this things they are? We tend to follow rules. It's good to follow rules, but there are some rules that need to be questioned. Like, why? Why is that today? Why is this not there? And the more we ask those whys, and the more we get answers, the more people might be able to find solution to the problems. Because some answers are problems. Like, why is this? Oh, there's a problem like this. So you're like, okay, if that's the problem, what is the solution? And I like the thing you said at the start of the podcast, that a solution, and a solution solver. And that's a mindset I would like you to go deeper. For myself, I'm also someone who's in that same field. Like, I really like just solution-based answers, you know. I don't like questions where I come to you with the problem, you also give me a problem as a response. And we're not going anywhere. We're not going anywhere. How is that helping me? So I'd like you to talk more about that mindset, that solution first mindset. How did you build upon it? How do you cultivate it? And what can people do to emulate that mindset?
Some of these things, I feel like it's you have it or you don't. For example, for me, I wake up every day in the morning and I go to work because I know that if I don't, someone is gonna starve, you know? There's not gonna be food to eat. So for me, I find that you grow up not having, and in your not having, you don't have anyone that you can look at and be like, hey, can you help me out? Because you know that they also don't have. So it's a matter of scarcity where if you grow up and you don't have certain things and you don't know people who have those resources, you have to go out and be the person who finds them. And being in that, I find it's quite difficult for me to evolve out of it. I think it's going to be a problem for me one day to be a nigga who made it. Yeah, because I'm always going to be in that, I don't want to go back, I don't want to go back, I don't want to go back. And at the same time, I feel like it's the sickness and the medicine at the same time, which the medicine is making you sick. So if I don't know if it's something that I think you can emulate, I think it's just something that you're born into. You're born into not having, and you're always looking for solutions to find a way to have. So I don't really think I can give much in advice for that, because my motivation every day is right in front of me.
Those are some wise words. It's not necessarily that you can emulate some of these things, but like you said, when someone sees you doing the things you do, I might not see the reason why you do it, but from someone, when I meet you, I might not be able to become you, but I can become something, like I can take some traits from you. Like, I really like that you're someone who's focused, driven, goal-oriented, you're making things. When I look at that, it also like motivates me, inspires me to be my own person in my own way. I might not be able to copy you exactly, like, oh, I'm the next Thomas, I'm the next Blue Ears, Dada, and this. No, it'll never work like that. But there's some traits that I think when people see you on social media or in real life, you pass off to other people. And on that topic alone, what can we expect from Thomas in the near future? What are the future plans for a person who wants to be the best in the world? What are your plans? What can we expect to see in the near future?
I'm launching there's a few products that we're gonna be launching before July ends. I don't know if I'm gonna post about it on social media, because I'm afraid that a lot of people are gonna pick up the idea and just run away with it. And we're also working on building more data sets, just collecting data, building more data sets, and seeing how we can monetize that. We see people like Kuda, who's building the Zivai thingy with the Africa AI project. I don't want to necessarily emulate something like that, but I want to like stay in the space and wait until I find a solution to a problem that's based on AI, and also like build something towards these steps with the whole, because he did something which I don't know, I've never seen someone do before, that thing where you like crowdsourcing for your funding something. So I'm considering doing something of that nature. We're gonna continue working on the football thingy. We're gonna be it's just more of the same. You can expect more of the same.
That is wonderful stuff. Especially I like the point you said, you're trying to build more data sets to use and access, so people can also learn, can use. For example, recently I remember you did a survey on mental health, and you managed to bring up a data set which you then shared to the people to use. I don't know, from your own studies, from your own analysis What is the situation and mental health from the responses you got? Can you just tell us a bit more about that simple project? Okay, I wouldn't say it's a simple project, but that project you just did there, how was it? How was it getting the information? How was it analyzing it, then giving out the resources so other people can use? How was that for you as a person just in your journey to becoming the best?
I loved it very much. And I'm very, very grateful to everybody, like the Data Science Zimbabwe team. We did the whole challenge, and everyone who responded to the challenge, they built all their own cool data sets and stuff like that. It was just amazing to see. And all the people who filled up the survey, I think we had like 60 something responses, just massive, just amazing. I think the idea behind all of that was initially to think, which like, okay, we have a mental health crisis in Zimbabwe, everybody knows that, but we do not really have a solution for all those people that are going through all of these things who would like some help. And we do not know exactly how much are those people interested in paying so that we can develop solutions around that, maybe with people who are qualified psychologists, psychiatrists, and stuff like that. So that's what we were trying to solve behind it. To paint a clearer picture of the status of mental health in Zimbabwe, we would need a much more bigger data set, in my opinion. And I'm sorry that we might have to cut this short. I have to go to the studio at Kiona. I'm doing a football analysis show there. So that's what I think about the whole situation with the data set. Very, very grateful to everybody.
That's very lovely. Then just to close everything up, the last question is just that, what advice would you give to people? Just like I always talk in the podcast, its main goal is just inspiring African people to just get up and just not wait for people to come and help them. What advice would you give to someone who's just starting out in whatever they're doing? They've got big goals like you. What advice would you give to them on the road, on the journey ahead?
I would say you should I shouldn't be giving anyone advice. I'm not that guy yet. I think what helps me, that's what I'm going to say. What helps me is thinking about the thing that I have to do in this particular hour or in this particular day. Like, you set your goals, like the big goals. I want to do this, I want to do that, I want to do this. And then you look at the micro and then say, which like, okay, to do that, I have to do these small steps every single day for that long. So just focus on the thing that's right in front of you, like right in your face. Just focus on that, then everything else is just going to align itself, I think.
Thank you, Thomas. That was some lovely advice. Yes, you did hear that guy. Yeah, that guy who gave advice. Yes, hear that guy. So the last thing is just share your socials where people can find you, contact you. Maybe people want to get engaged with you on some projects. Where can the people find you?
Yeah. If you want to find me, wherever you want to find me, just go on Google and then you type Meeting with Thomas Chuma Data Science, then you're just gonna find me there. It's simple as that one.
They will definitely will, and they will definitely have ideas to share. Thank you for being here with us today. It was lovely hearing your story, your journey, your goals, and we expect to see these things you said. We'll always be supporting and just checking out. And as the issue of data set, when you give out those forms, we always want to reshare them so more and more people can answer them and we begin to solve this problem.
Hey, thank you very much, man. Thank you very much. Hey.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. Make sure to subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to. Also, make sure to follow us on Instagram, Africa's Blank Canvas Podcast, so you're always up to date with the latest news. Don't forget to share. That's the only way we grow.